And good evening once again, everybody. Welcome to Hoops HD's Under the Radar podcast, your source for everything to do with the teams from the smaller and the mid-major conferences. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, streaming to you live from the heart of Atlantic Sun Country here in New Jersey. And joining me, as always, the number one rated college basketball puppet on the internet, David Griggs. David, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great. I'm hoping we were able to record this without interruption. We've been having some technical difficulties to start with. So if you're watching and it's posted, hopefully that means we got it done.
Hopefully that means that David did not spill his drink all over the computer to cause it to crash. If he does, right, we'll try to get it back up, and you may have a second podcast blow us with the second half of this.
It'll be down there.
Okay. But David tried to keep the alcohol away from the computer. They do not mix.
What the? I got it in a...
Oh, there he goes.
Yeah, you shouldn't spill.
All right. But what we like to do every week with the Under the Radar podcast is begin by redefining Under the Radar for everybody. And David, why don't you tell us what it means to be under the radar?
Well, essentially, I'll tell you what it's not. It is not... Essentially, there are five power conferences, autonomy conferences. That's the ACC, SEC, Big Ten, Big 12, and Pac-12. And there, in addition to that, there are four regular multi-bid conferences in college basketball. And those are the American, the Atlantic 10, the Mountain West, although they're not looking like it this year. And, oh my God. Oh, Chad, I need another drink.
What's the Big East.
Yes, the Big East. Oh, wow. Anyway, so anyone in those nine conferences, we don't consider them under the radar. The other disqualifier is if you're ranked in the human polls. So Wichita State, for instance, ranked in the 20s. If you're in the rankings, you're not under the radar. And just this year, Chad, we added a third disqualifier. There are two brand teams, albeit in under the radar conferences. One is Gonzaga, the other BYU. Because of the brand that they have, they are not under the radar.
They are not under the radar. Very briefly, last week, St. Mary's had moved into the coaches poll top 25. They had fallen off of being under the radar. We would like to welcome them back this week after losing at BYU.
Yes.
They are once again under the radar where they belong, but we'll be getting there in a little bit here. But what we do every week is we kind of like to choose a feature conference to start the show off with, and then we'll run through the other remaining 22 conferences in alphabetical order. And tonight's feature conference, I believe, David, we want to go with the Northeast Conference. Is that correct?
Yeah. And what a conference to go with.
In terms of standings right now, there are three games separating first place from eighth place, so out of 10 teams.
Yeah, and the top five teams are separated by just one game. This really is a great conference. It never gets the attention that – I'm not going to say that it should, but I don't think people fully appreciate it because it is so weak. It normally ends up on the 16 line. There have been years where teams have gotten as high as the 15. I don't recall anyone, with the exception of the first four games or the opening round, winning in the round of 64. I think Robert Morris came very close to beating Villanova one year, but in out of conference, they're getting paid. They're going out. They're on the receiving end of bye games. And it's rare that they're competitive, but in conference, it is a fantastic league. It's a bunch of like-minded schools, a lot of great rivalries, a lot of unique venues. These aren't big stadiums that are cavernous. These are small, compact, lots of energy around these games. The NEC streams them all. This is a fun league with great rivalries. The other thing, the regular season feeds into the conference tournament because the conference tournament is at campus sites based on seating. So this is one of the more exciting conferences in the country right now, considering five teams are separated by one game and all of them want that home court advantage.
And, I mean, yeah, if, one of these teams will have to go on the road for the quarterfinal game as the five seed.
Yeah.
But even more than that, you want to be the one seed and get the chance to have all three of your conference tournament games at home. And it could be, I mean, Wagner, Fairleigh Dickinson, SFPA right now, all tied for first at 8-4. But you mentioned the rivalries here. St. Francis, Brooklyn, and LIU, Brooklyn, one of our favorite in-conference rivalries. These two schools are almost literally across the street from each other.
you know,
they always have some of the most exciting games, right? Wagner is there. You've got, Sacred Heart, who's over in Connecticut. Fairleigh Dickinson right there in northern New Jersey as well. A lot of teams very close to each other. One other, well, Central Connecticut State, obviously in Connecticut as well. They're not having a very good year, though. But the other thing that, you know, maybe if you're thinking about the Northeast Conference, one of the rare cases where you actually think of an NIT game, but when Kentucky did not make the tournament a few years back, got Robert Morris in the first round, but because Rupp Arena was being used as an NCAA tournament site, they had to go to Robert Morris for an NIT for their NIT first round game. Robert Morris beat them. One of the most amazing NIT games I've ever seen. Right. To talk a little NIT, which we very rarely do, but
right. Okay. Chad, we had some technical difficulties, but I think somehow we're back and we're still going.
Oh, okay. We're still here. For some reason, I'm seeing two images of you here, David, but
the more the merrier.
Okay. So hopefully we're still here.
Depending on how often this continues to crash, you might see a whole line of me at the bottom.
I thought one internet puppet was enough. Now we got two of them. But let's keep going. The Northeast Conference here. Well, the one last thing we want to do with the Northeast Conference is discuss who we do feel is going to win the conference. I think Wagner has shown to be the best team so far. Not that they're very good compared to anybody outside the league, though.
Yeah. I think that they've shown they really are one of the better teams. I think that they're my favorite to win it, especially if they get it at home court advantage, but they're going to have to earn it. They've lost those games already. And like you look at some of these teams, Long Island, kind of down in the standings, but you got to watch out for them too.
You got to watch out for them. Robert Morris was my preseason pick to win this conference. They're tied with Long Island, seventh place right now. So, and another fact here, actually, only the top eight teams will qualify into the conference tournament. So while Central Connecticut does not look good, there may be a battle here. Bryant, Robert Morris, Long Island, anybody else just falls down here a little for that last spot.
Yeah.
But let's move up to the America East and kind of run through them in our normal order here. David, still just two of you here right now? Or I think we're down to one of you.
Yeah, it's down to one of me.
Okay, good.
I don't know if that's good or not. So.
All right. But let's keep going here. Let's start with up in the America East, where Stony Brook continues to excel here, 20-4 overall, 11-0, and one of only, I believe, four teams left undefeated in conference play right now in the country.
Yeah, and they've been blowing through this league pretty good. I've been really impressed with this Stony Brook team. I think that, I mean, if they get up to the 13 line, which I could certainly see them doing, they're going to cause some real damage.
Yeah, I mean, they did not do much out of conference. They have a home win over Hofstra and a home win over Princeton, which are not exactly the greatest of wins, but they are a dangerous team. They really only played two teams that are anywhere near the NCAA tournament talk, and those would be Notre Dame and Vanderbilt. Notre Dame crushed them back in December. They played a close game at Vanderbilt, losing by 7 points, but Vanderbilt is probably not a tournament team either.
Probably not.
Let's move over to the A-Sun, where we suddenly have a first-place tie that we did not expect to see after the way North Florida had started out the conference season.
Yeah, North Florida has really hit the skids here this last week, and you wonder what is wrong. I mean, you know, from looking clearly like the best team out of conference, even getting some big notable wins, well, Illinois anyway, that turned out to not be so notable. But, you know, and then they were just blowing through the conference. But this past week, they've really started to struggle.
Yeah, the home loss to Stetson, which completely boggled our minds. And then they got crushed 81-65 at Gulf Coast. They got games at Kennesaw and at Lipscomb coming up. They really got to, you know, rebound and, you know, start winning some games here. But Jacksonville is suddenly the story here. Moved up to in the first place tie with them. North Florida did beat them head to head the first time they've played, but they've now run off five straight wins, including two wins over Gulf Coast in that time.
Right.
And two wins over Stetson. Kind of a strange schedule there, but.
Right, the Dolphins, I believe they went to the Final Four back in the 70s at some point, so a little bit of a resurgence, not quite the same as that. But
they were in the Sun Belt for a while, if I remember right.
Yeah, so, I mean, and again, this has turned into an exciting two-horse race, and the team of the people last year's team of the people, New, you know, NJIT, kind of in the thick of it as well.
Yeah, in the upper two games back, looking good to at least get a pretty good shot getting at least a quarterfinal home game, if nothing else.
Yeah.
Over in the Big Sky, it's been a two-horse race. It still is, although both Montana and Weber State have slipped up once each over the past week. They still are two games up the loss column over everybody else here.
Yeah, and looking like the best, too. So, again, it's just it's going to be an exciting race because the winner gets to wear white all the way through the tournament.
Well, the two teams only play once during the regular season. It won't be until February 27th, so we're not really going to know who is the best team, I don't think, until then, at least going into the conference tournament, and we expect them to play again in the conference tournament finals, though.
Right.
Big South has suddenly become exactly what it was last year, another conference that's just a complete mess top to bottom.
Yeah, and it worked backwards to that. I mean, you know, you had these teams, High Point in particular, that appeared to open up a lead over everyone else. High Point, I still, when I look at their talent and I look at their personnel, you think that they should be crushing the conference, but they're not. Asheville back in first place, and right now I'd have to say they've looked the best. They have that win at Georgetown.
I mean, High Point has now lost 5 out of 7 games. Three of those losses coming at home to Gardner Webb, Liberty. It's just
Liberty. You don't. That's not good.
Yeah. Now, of course, Gardner Webb and Liberty are right there in the thick of things, but everybody's in the thick of things because you go from 10-3 Asheville down to 6th place by within 2 games in the loss column with a High Point there at 7-5. So
yeah, and this conference, when it comes to their tournament, implements the Centenary Award policy here. Campbell hosting Campbell in last place.
Yes, so Campbell, it may actually become a true neutral court because we do not expect Campbell to get out of the 6-11 game in that conference.
Right, yeah. Right?
Although right now they'd be playing High Point, so you don't know the way High Point's playing.
Mm-hmm.
The Big West Conference is a conference that we've been talking a lot about this year, actually, because Hawaii and UC Irvine have really just been running away with this conference, and although they both have slipped up once in conference play, not this week, actually the week before, but they're still both looking really good here.
They are. I don't think either could land inside the bubble, although we just scrubbed
ourselves.
They'll
be close, though. I think
they'll
be
close. But that's the thing. These are not, I mean, if they get onto the 12 line, if they get onto the 13 line, which is, I don't see either of them being any worse than 13. This is the kind of game they're capable of beating a 4 seed or a 5 seed. They really are.
And David, we've been kind of waiting for it all season. They do play a full double round robin in the Big West. We've been waiting for these two teams to finally match up for the first of their two meetings all season.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow night, you're going to stay up late, start with a 1 a.m. Eastern start time out in the island. UC Irvine will be out there in Hawaii. So
yes.
David Griggs will be up at 3 a.m. watching the end of that game.
Yes, hoping Hangouts doesn't crash on me again. We will be awake for the whole time. So
So follow us on Twitter. Follow David at David G Puppet on Twitter. Yeah. He will tell you all about the game or about how drunk he is or both.
Right.
Over in the Colonial, another conference that we really thought was going to be exciting heading into the season and really has been. Just it seems every week we're getting some great games here. As we still have 5 teams that are clearly near the top of this conference, and maybe even College of Charleston or Northeastern another step below the rest of them.
Right, Northeastern kind of surprisingly bad. They were the team that I liked the most coming into the year. They're not even at 500. They have that win at Miami, Florida, and it's making the Canes look worse and worse and worse as they continue to go through this. Paper-wise, Bill and Mary, if they can get ahead of Wilmington in the standings, they fit that category of top 40 RPI first-place finisher. Do they land inside the bubble? And given how weak the bubble is and how 2 more teams are open to it, I kind of think they do, Chad. Categorically, I think the real committee will take them. I don't know if ours will, but I think the real committee will.
Again, what we need would have to happen here is Bill and Mary would basically have to win out to the conference tournament title game. It means beating Hofstra at home tomorrow night. It means winning at Towson, who is one of the teams that is in this group. It means beating Wilmington at home. winning at James Madison the last game of the regular season. There's a lot of tough games left there.
Right, because they have to be the again, that I know of, we'll have to get our fact checker on this. Only once ever has a top 50 team that was an outright
top 40.
Yeah, it's never happened to a top 40 team, has it? That was an outright first place finisher.
I believe one time it was a top 40 team. Just barely the top 40, but I believe you're right. Somewhere right around that mark, right around the 40 mark, though. And now they're inside that 40 mark. Right now they're sitting at 36.
Right, yeah. And if they can be an outright first-place finisher, I think they go.
Wilmington, who they do need to chase to catch, obviously they play them once. Wilmington, actually, 4 out of 6 remaining games are all at home. So, I mean, this Wilmington team really has been kind of surprising here. They've now run off 9 straight victories heading into tomorrow night's home game against Elon. They just seem to be beating everybody. They won at Hofstra. They won at Northeastern. They won at James Madison. I did not expect much of them, but here they are.
And it kind of came out of nowhere. They got off to a good start to the season, but they were beating up on the pastry cart. They go to Georgetown, almost win that game. Didn't they fall way behind and come back?
Yes.
I think they were way down in that game. Then they lost their next 3. After that, and you kind of wrote them off, but since then, I mean, right now they are just on an absolute tear. Now, I don't think their paper is good enough to get them there the way Bill and Mary's is, but they're a dangerous team. And when you look at this conference, let's see if we can get this up here. Again, this isn't always easy without any arms, but I think we got it here. When you look at this conference, somebody's going like. You got Wilmington, you got Bill and Mary, you got Hofstra that's potentially dangerous. They've already had a win over Ohio's. There's 3 or 4 teams that, again, if they get onto that 12 line, if they get onto that 13 line, they can win a game in the first round. Northeastern did almost win a game in the first round last year.
Right. And I think just going back to Wilmington, the big difference between Wilmington and Bill and Mary, Bill and Mary's overall strength of schedule is at 94 right now, which is respectable. Wilmington's at 217, second worst in the conference. And that's the big difference there. And that's why if you look at the power ratings, Wilmington's a 78 RPI team, despite being a game ahead of Bill and Mary, who's at 36 RPI. So,
right.
Let's go over to Conference USA, though, David. And we had a little bit of a discussion about this before we came on the air, whether or not there's any chance UAB could get into the at-large picture if they win every remaining game through the conference tournament finals. I don't think there is, personally.
I don't think there's
20-4 record as we sit here right now.
I don't think there is either. I think they will get a look. Well, they'll definitely – all first-place finishers start off on the board, so they get somewhat of a look. But, again, the Northeast, who we talked about, whoever is the first-place team, is the first order of business will probably be removing them from the board. they just don't have it. Nobody in this league has it. You have no one inside the top 100 except Middle Tennessee, so they can't beat top 100 teams. Their schedule consists of sub-NIT teams the rest of the way. And they haven't beaten anybody that's really any good. They're going to have a bloated record. I mean, they could win 27, 28, 29. But the committee's going to look at that and say, well, 26 of them came against sub-NIT teams. We're not taking them, and they won't.
Right.
Good team, though. What line – I mean, they've been landing on our 14 line. Is this a live wire 14 seed, or is it –
Yeah, I don't think I want to face UAB as if I'm a 3 seed facing a 14 seed. I probably the least one I want to face of any of the 14 seeds that'll be out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's a dangerous team, especially, you know, I mean, you're going to be thinking back to what they did last year, pulling off the first round upset. So.
Right. Yeah.
Let's move over to the Horizon League and we want to have a little bit of talk about this Valparaiso team, another team that's sitting here at the same exact record as UAB at 20-4 overall. But this Valpo team, I think you've become a lot higher on them than I am even at this point, David. And I'm just, you know, I'm having a little bit of trouble getting past the 2 bad losses they have at the bottom of their profile.
Right. Here's their profile on the screen. And again, this is coming from our good friend and colleague, Warren Nolan, warrennolan.com, his site. Check it out. In my opinion, the best site for at least the statistical information and RPI numbers. But again, some of the things I like, 9 true road wins, that is a lot. And some of them are pretty good. They won at Oregon State. They won at Oakland, who is it's not the easiest place to win. Their loss at Oregon, they were very competitive in that game. Oregon, we got them up on the 2-line right now. They do have a couple ugly losses. I think the loss at Ball State is forgivable to a degree because Ball State's they've played well at home. Now, don't get it twisted. That is a game that an NCAA tournament caliber team should win almost all of the time. But when you look at Villapo has won almost all of the time.
Well, David,
they've won the games they're supposed to win.
Here's my argument with Valpo. Let's assume that Valpo wins their 7 remaining regular season games, none of which are going to do anything to help their numbers. The best game, the toughest game they have there is maybe at Milwaukee. Let's assume that they win their semifinal. I believe they get a bye into the semifinals of the Horizon League. They win that game. They go on to the championship game, and they play in Oakland there, and they lose it.
Yeah.
You now have – that's going to be a sub-100, maybe even another sub-150 loss there. 3 of them on the bottom of the profile. And the only win against a team that's going to be in the field or even close to being in the field, and we don't know if they'll be in or not, is that win at Oregon State. And that's my problem with saying that Valpo really is going to be in this tournament if that's what happens. I think that there's just – too many losses here. You've got a loss at Belmont, who is sitting at RPI 94 right now. They may drop to be a sub-100 loss. They've got the Ball State and the Wright State losses on there. You compare that to a team like Monmouth that we're going to get to in a minute here that has multiple big wins to offset those 3 bad losses.
Right. Well, okay, here's a couple of things. Belmont and Wright State, those are games, again, that they should have won. But both are 10-1 at home. Both only have 1 home loss. And again, I'm not saying that those are good losses. I'm not saying those aren't damaging losses. But I am saying it's not the same as – it's better than just saying, oh, it's a sub-100 loss. Well, it's a loss to a team that won all their, but 1 of their home
games. Okay, David, hold on. Can you hold on 1 second? You say that Wright State has only lost once at home. We know you said they're 10-1 at home, correct? Or something like that.
Yes. Okay.
You said one of those wins is over Valpo. Let me tell you who their other wins were over.
Well, we don't need to get into this.
Bowling Green, Murray State, Cleveland State, UIC, maybe one of the worst teams in Division I. They lost the game at home to Georgia State, who is middle to the bottom of the pack in the Sun Belt this year. You got to look at who these teams play that are 10-1 at home also.
They're 10-1 at home.
I didn't even go into the other team we mentioned. You mentioned it was Belmont. Well, you want to take a look at them, or should we move on to the next?
We're kind of pressed for time here.
Okay.
But I think Valpo. But I'll say that if they get in, I think they will win out. I think they will win the conference tournament. I think they're incredibly dangerous.
Lipscomb, Austin, Eastern Illinois, Tennessee State, Morehead State, and a loss at home to Eastern Kentucky.
Not like they played rugby.
Okay. But let's go ahead and move on to the Ivy League here, which is always one of the more interesting conferences, obviously, because there is no postseason tournament. And at this point, it's kind of looking like a 3-team race between Yale, Columbia, and Princeton. Yale 6-0, Columbia 5-1, Princeton 4-1. I think we can write off everybody else in this league at this point.
I think so. Because, again, it's a big gap after that. Kind of surprising. The team I liked coming into conference play was the Harvard Crimson. They have struggled a little bit. I don't think that
let me throw this out there for you, David. If Harvard loses both their games at home this week to Brown and Yale, and Yale also wins at Dartmouth – Harvard will be mathematically eliminated from the Ivy League championship.
Yes. Yes, so they're making it hard on themselves. But Yale and Princeton, I don't think they're going to get up into the – well, again, there's no bubble here because there's no tournament. So if you finish first, you're in. But we were talking about this as we were scrubbing the board. Do you foresee a scenario where maybe more than one get in?
I don't see it this year because looking at who Yale and Princeton have actually played and beaten, even though their power number ratings are right in the 60s right now, I just don't see them be able to improve those numbers into the top 40, which is kind of that benchmark, outright first place finisher, top 40. And we're not talking about an outright first place finisher, we'd be talking about a team that tied for first place and lost a one game playoff. And
Right.
that's where it becomes difficult. I think back a few years, Harvard had a team that lost to Princeton in a one game playoff the year before Harvard started their streak. And
Yes.
that team was right there on the bubble.
Yeah, they
so
really were.
It is possible, but neither Yale nor Princeton has done out of conference what that Harvard team did
yeah.
a few years back. So I don't think – I think it's a one-bit league. I think it will be very interesting, especially if Columbia can stay in the mix here as well.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody's got to beat Yale. If Yale does go and win and sweep this weekend and either Columbia or Princeton slips up, it's going to become difficult. In fact, Columbia and Princeton will be playing each other in a pretty big game coming up on
right.
Saturday.
Well, what we really want is a three-way tie.
It has happened twice
it has.
Before.
It
yes, it has.
Yes.
Metro Atlantic, we mentioned Monmouth a few minutes ago, but Monmouth sitting here, outright first place, RPI of 31. That's what you need to get into the
yes.
tournament.
Yes, and they will. I cannot imagine. I mean, if they hold serve, I think they're in. This Monmouth team is a lot of fun. They do have three losses that you're kind of holding your nose at pretty bad. Really, the loss at Manhattan was kind of surprising. I'm surprised by both their conference losses. Not that they slipped up, but they really didn't. Their defense was just non-existent, especially in that Canisius game.
Yeah, that was a rough game. I mean, Robinson was in foul trouble the whole game for Canisius, and they really just kind of threw them off their game. But
yeah.
The good news, they only have two road games left. This team has been true road warriors. This Friday night at Ryder, one more game at St. Peter's. Toughest game remaining is a home game against Iona February 19th. Other than that, you've got the conference tournament, which will be played just as we love to see it on the home court of a team that's in the upper half of the standings.
Right. Here's their profile here. I get on warrennolan.com. And again, when we do our bracketology podcast, we plan on recording that tomorrow, assuming Google holds up. But again, RPI 31 and an outright first place team. RPI, a team with an RPI that good and that's in first place has never been left out. Something else, 11 true road wins, 13 wins away from home overall. I think only once has a team had 12 or more and been left out. That was Drexel a few years back, if you remember them. So categorically, everything about Monmouth screams inside the bubble.
Right. I mean, obviously, they do have to hold form. They lose two more games during the regular season and the quarterfinals of the conference tournament. It's a completely different profile.
Correct, but yeah.
We're assuming that they either win – that they win out all the – and maybe if they need an at-large bid, it's from a loss to Siena in the conference championship game, something of that like.
Mm-hmm.
Over in the Mid-American, I made this case for Akron last week. Again, we're talking about first-place finishers with top outright first-place teams with top 50 RPIs, and that's what Akron is right now. And a chance to have a historically high number of D1 wins should they need an at-large bid
yeah.
if they went out.
Mm-hmm. And again, looking at Akron here, 19-4. Now, one of the things that's really going to work against them is their strength of schedule. It's pretty poor. Whereas Monmouth was 13th out of conference. Warren Nolan calculates it at 276. He does it exactly the same way the selection committee does it. This is replicas. That's really low. But
yeah, and I'll make the same. I mean, the argument I just made against Valpo can absolutely be used right in my face here with this Akron profile. They don't have that marquee win. Their best win at Arkansas is even worse than the win at Oregon State that Valpo has.
Right.
And Akron's other problem is they still have the second best team in the MAC is probably Kent State. They got to play them twice still the regular season.
Yeah.
They've got tough roads to go here.
Now, here's the thing about Akron. If they're able to get through this, and it's not going to be easy, they still have the ladder format. Is that right? Or did they do away with that? It's just the standard seating.
Right.
So it's going to be more difficult than it would have been last year, unfortunately. But if they can get through it, this Akron team is playing extremely well. They have been really for most of the season. Kind of a head-scratcher at Toledo. That was one of the first games that I had watched. They had won, I think, 9 or 10 in a row, and then they lost the game at Central Michigan. That's a little bit forgivable. But Toledo, they went in there and looked pretty bad. But I've watched their last couple games. They look pretty good. This is, again, one of those, where do they end up? I think they're very 12, 13-ish. They're not as good as the 5 seed, but they're definitely good enough to beat a 5 or a 4 seed. This Akron team is pretty good. So Stony Brook, who we talked about earlier.
Now, the MAC has this East-West divisional format. It is completely ignored for the conference tournament, not even giving the number 2 overall seed to the other division champion, which is almost a bit of a shame because we got a heck of a battle going on for the West Division regular season title with three teams tied at 6-5 and one and Northern Illinois game behind them at 5-6. But
yeah,
in the end, you're looking at, you know, these teams are just gonna be battling for the fifth seed through the eighth seed or something in that ballpark.
Right. And again, as in most years, this has been, it just seems like this is a constant. The East is very, very strong. The West is very weak. You got Akron, Kent State, Buffalo, and Ohio, and those are traditionally four of the best teams. In the West, you have Toledo, who's typically pretty good. Central Michigan's was expected to be good this year, but they're typically not. So, out of the five best teams or five best programs in this conference, four of them are in the same division. So.
And those you could have four teams from the East as the top four seeds and going beyond that for the West. But let's head over to the MEAC, a conference that up until this week, we've really just been looking at Hampton kind of dominating it. They've slipped back to the pack a little bit, or maybe the pack's caught up with them. We now have them and South Carolina State tied for first, and Norfolk State also with only two losses, half a game back at 8-2. Setting up for a pretty interesting end to the regular season here.
It really is, and this is kind of a rarity for this league. You typically see one of the teams run away from it. A few years ago, I think it was Norfolk and I want to say was it Hampton that were 1-2, and they in some weird format they didn't play each other.
I believe it was Savannah State and Norfolk that year.
Was that it? Okay, yeah. But this year, I believe the tournament's in Norfolk, albeit not on their home court. SC State, you got to feel good about this. This was not just a program that was in trouble of being in shut down. It was an institution that a year ago today looked like it was going to be shut down. So this is kind of a feel good story to see them, at least for me, to see them way up there in first place. And man, how great would it be if they made the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I mean, it really is, and they've been playing really well as of late, picking up wins, have caught up here with Hampton. I would have to pull up their schedule here, which I'm trying to load right now as we speak, to see if Fred's playing Hampton. They have already played Hampton. They actually won at Hampton, which is one of the reasons why Hampton started falling down here. So they could end up, if they can hold serve and win their final five regular season games, they should end up as the number one seed in the conference tournament as well.
Yeah.
Let's slip over here to the Missouri Valley Conference. We are not going to discuss Wichita State, who is still in the top 25, but is there anything really else worth discussing in the Missouri Valley beyond Wichita, or is it pretty much game over for everybody, including Evansville?
I would say it's game over. Evansville had a weak case, even if they won out. They pretty much had to beat Wichita at least once. They have since, I think they've lost their last two or three games. It's just not going to happen. RPI in the 80s, no top 50 wins. And the other thing, this is kind of surprising because this is a league that we're used to seeing put at least two in.
Yeah, I still think there's a decent shot here, especially after Wichita slipped off against Illinois State, that maybe somebody gets Wichita in the conference tournament and we get two teams that way. I would not. I'm not just going to give this conference tournament championship to Wichita by any means. And right. The Missouri Valley Conference historically has had some of the most exciting conference tournaments. So I really think last year with Wichita lost the semifinals, Illinois State had that incredible game against Northern Iowa. But let's go over to the Ohio Valley because we already discussed the Northeast. And the last few years, there's been some great battles at the top of the East Division between Belmont and Eastern Kentucky. Yeah. This year, we did not expect that to be the case. Eastern Kentucky has not been very good. And yet, this past week, Eastern Kentucky went to Belmont and won 88-78 in a game I haven't figured out yet, David.
Well, Belmont has been a little bit of a head-scratcher. They've lost two of their last three, one at Tennessee Tech, who's way up there, but still, as good as Belmont looked, I thought Belmont might lose one game all year, and it would just be like when they had an off night. I mean, I thought they were a fringe bubble team, whereas everybody else wasn't anywhere close to the NIT. Here they are losing two of their last three, including one at home to Eastern Kentucky, and it was a really surprising result. Now, they're blasting Jacksonville State right now at home as we're recording this. Hopefully you're watching this, because after it crashed on us, we're still worried that this isn't recording. So hopefully you're getting to watch this. But, so they might be riding the ship a little bit. But, I mean, I thought this would be a cakewalk for them. It's still set up for them to be successful. They'll buy into the semis if they win the division. Is that right?
Yeah, they will buy into the semis. They will be the number one. Whoever wins the East Division should be the one seed overall. Right. Unlike the MAC, the Ohio Valley, the two seed will go to the West Division champ, which right now is actually Eastern Illinois, kind of surprisingly, although I still think Murray State's going to end up taking that in the end. Or maybe UT Martin, if not Murray State.
Yeah.
And then below that, everybody else is seeded 3 through 8 and four teams, regardless of division. Then the worst four teams, again, regardless of division, don't even make the conference tournament.
Mm-hmm.
But let's go over to the Patriot League, where Bucknell continues to not only lead in the conference, but is up by two games, not necessarily because of anything that they've been doing, as they've lost 2 out of 3, but the fact that everybody else is losing as well.
Yeah, and it's just they're losing to the bottom of the league. Bucknell just got their clocks cleaned tonight by Lehigh. It was ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lehigh's actually now moved into a tie for second place.
But
10-14 overall. Navy, who we liked for a while, is fallen off. Army 5-8. American had made a little bit of a run. Their streak finally came to an end. But if you look at it from, you got four teams tied for second place in the loss column with 5 losses, any of which could move up into second place or third place, and like we discussed with some of the other conferences, it's very important here because you will be hosting the conference tournament games on your home court of the higher seeds.
And in the case of Boston U, that home court is the roof.
That is the roof. Case Gym there above Agganis. We love that. They've played all their home games there this year. I assume a conference tournament game would be there as well.
Yeah, I walked out of a meeting so I could watch Boston U play on the roof on streaming. So, I mean, that's you all seem kind of puzzled by that, but it was on the roof. So that's it. I mean, that's who I'm pulling for. Not because I really like their team. I just love the roof.
Over in the SoCon, David, I need to issue an apology here. And I really have been looking for a chance to focus in on some of the MEAC teams in my under-the-radar game of the day. And I did that on Monday night. I know I passed up on a Chattanooga at Mercer game. And it ended up being one of the best games of the SoCon all season. So my apologies to Chattanooga and Mercer there. Obviously, we've discussed last week, the tragedy that did happen at Mercer. It's just horrible. But Mercer did play really well against Chattanooga this week. But Chattanooga got the win and is now 6 games away from 6 more wins. We'll get them into the conference tournament. With only one conference loss. At that point, David, I think they're in the tournament, the NCAAs.
I am too. And, Chad, I'm going to pull up their paper here on Warren's site. There it is. That's actually Mercer. In looking at this, their RPI is pretty healthy. Again, top 40, outright first place team. Now, I know how you and I would feel about this on our committee. I really wish John Tytel was here or somebody else that studies the real committee. This win at Mercer. Mercer, not a top 100 team, but they were unbeaten at home. That was their first home loss. I would argue, although I was arguing it earlier and you were disagreeing with me, that that's a quality win, at least a notable win, to go into Mercer and be the only team that's won there.
I think it's notable in that way. Yeah. I don't think it's – I think what I love about this Chattanooga profile above anything else is the win at Dayton. And the win at Dayton was the first game after Casey Jones went down for the year.
Right.
I mean, since that they've been – only lost the one game at Furman since he went out. So they've proven they can win without him.
Yeah.
And they prove that they can beat – protected seed caliber teams without him. And for that reason alone, I can forgive the two losses, Louisiana Monroe and at Furman. And I think that this team absolutely belongs in the NCAA tournament if they just suffer only one more loss and it's in that conference, the SoCon tournament.
Right. You can't focus on you can't think this way if you're with Chattanooga's program, but this is under the radar and we're not with Chattanooga's program. They're definitely the best team in the SoCon. They're blowing through it. They're really not missing him. With Casey Jones, I think this team gets out of the round of 64. They were so good. This was a team we were really excited about coming into the season. We were really excited about to start the season. They wanted Georgia. They wanted Illinois. And, again, those didn't turn out to be that good. But when they started off with those two wins on the road, this was a good basketball team. I hate it for Jones, and I hate it for them that they lost. And I don't know, maybe they can still pull it off without him.
But this is a team. When a team suffers a loss, a season-ending loss like that, of a player like that, one of the things that the committee has always said they look at is how did you play after he went down? And Chattanooga has proven that they are – their best win of the season came without him.
Yeah.
Outright. And
the day after he got hurt, like he actually traveled with the team. Yeah. He got hurt in practice, did he not? Like
I believe so. I know that he did travel with the team. It was the last minute decision that he was not going to play that day, and he hasn't played since. But I mean, sitting here with only three losses at RPI and at 32, I think it would be an absolute cry if this team got left out. If they can win out the rest of the regular season games, probably got to win your quarterfinal game in the SoCon tournament because that will be against somebody that's awful. But if you lose then in the semis to a Mercer, in the championship to an East Tennessee State or to a Furman or a Wofford, I think that they would belong in.
Yeah, and they would because you shouldn't be punished for not doing something again that you've already done, and they will have already beaten everybody. Yep. So.
And they'll beat everybody twice other than Furman, who they would have struggled with. Southland Conference, one of our four remaining teams that's undefeated in conference play in the country, is sitting here as they are every year, it seems. Stephen F. Austin has, again, undefeated in Southland play. That seems to be a broken record.
It is. They dominate this league. They're dominating it again. And, you know, you had the good story with Houston Baptist. I actually watched that game. I watched the entire game on that little stream. It looked, I mean – and they just went in there, and I don't want to say they blew them out. That's not entirely fair. But they went in and they handled them. And I mean this relatively speaking. Relative to the Southland, that was an impressive win because the arena was full. It was a big showcase. It was perhaps Houston Baptist's biggest home game in their history, at least as a Div 1 program. And they just went in there and beat them. Now, relative to the rest of the NCAA tournament, they're nowhere near the bubble, and they shouldn't be.
No, they absolutely shouldn't be. Now, they have a couple tough games left if they want to try to go undefeated in conference play. The biggest one, the regular season finale at Sam Houston State. They also have two games left with Incarnate Word, who has been, once again, surprisingly good in the Southland for a team that's only in its third year of transitioning up. 12-9 overall, 7-3 in conference. They've been very competitive over the last couple of years, though.
Mm-hmm.
Over in the SWAC, probably the most surprising game of the past week in terms of upsets. Texas Southern, who had been undefeated in conference play, rolling through the SWAC, went to Prairie View, who was our front runner for the Centenary Award for the worst team in D1, and lost 59-55 this weekend.
Yeah.
Go figure.
The difference between the two, and I realize that, you know, people's brain, it just goes 1, 2, 3, and then once you get past 100, 110 and 300 are both bad. Well, the difference between the two really would have been like, is this here? It would be like Oklahoma losing to a team that has no chance of making the NIT.
If Oklahoma loses to TCU, that's the type of – that's what this is.
Right. I mean, the gap between the two is that bad, and it was surprising.
Villanova loses to St. John's. I think that may be more on point than this.
Right, yeah.
Texas Southern still two games up in the conference ahead of Southern and Jackson State and Alcorn State, who is actually ineligible on the APR ban list. best RPI actually below Southern right now over Texas Southern after that loss. Over in the Summit League, David, as we record this, there's about a minute and a half left in this game between South Dakota State and Omaha, which is neck and neck right now.
Yeah, really exciting game. Big game for South Dakota State. It doesn't matter in terms of the bubble, but again, South Dakota State looking 13-14 seed line-ish. This would be a nice win for them on the road in that regard as far as what line they end up on. Really exciting game. South Dakota State looked really impressive at the beginning. Omaha's kind of gotten back into it. Omaha's arena is rather large. They're not messing around.
No, they were serious about moving up to D1. This is their first year after they completed their transition. So congratulations to them. They're having a great season right now, tied for third and with a chance to move into a tie for second if they get this win tonight.
Right, and a big deal for them. This is going to be an exciting conference tournament. There's a lot of teams I like. I like South Dakota State, North Dakota State, kind of underachieving this year. They were a team that I really liked coming into the year. And Omaha, what a story. What's interesting,
Fort
a little
Wayne
bit of
also.
Fort Wayne as well, having a pretty good year. Right there in second place. I like them. I like them a lot. By the time you get past the quarters in this conference, it should be really exciting. In reference to Omaha, their first year eligible, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the first and only time a team has ever made the NCAA tournament, the first year was eligible for it, was North Dakota State out of this conference. So a little bit of trivia there.
That's pretty interesting. Over in the Sun Belt, Arkansas Little Rock, 21-2, 11-1 in conference. And David, we know how much the media and the coaches love to vote for teams that have gaudy records who have done absolutely nothing. On the other hand, we have this, I guess for every rule, you've got to have an exception, because I think Little Rock got two votes total between both polls combined. And I can't figure out why the media is completely ignoring this 21-2 team that's sitting here in the Sun Belt Conference with wins at San Diego State, at Tulsa.
Yeah.
And only one bad loss. Granted, it was a bad one at Arkansas State, but that's the only blemish on the record.
Yeah, I mean, and again, they've done more than nothing. They've certainly done more than St. Mary's, who's been getting votes. The win at San Diego State looking more and more impressive. Tulsa, not a tournament team, but it's not easy to win there. You know, they have nine true road wins, an additional neutral floor win. They're blowing through their conference. Now, they're starting a rather difficult stretch, as you see there. They're on the road for their next four games. If they get through all four of those, they deserve a ton of respect. And they simply haven't gotten any attention. And this is I hate harping on it, but last year Murray State got into the rankings, and then all of a sudden they're everyone's favorite dark horse, and they're this sympathetic story about how the committee doesn't respect them. Never mind last year that there were three or four teams with more Div 1 wins against tougher schedules than Murray. Valpo was one, Iona was another one, Wofford was one. This team's way better than last year's Murray State. It's not even close. Nothing from anyone.
I can't figure it out. If they get through these next four and they win all four of them and they're still not getting in the rankings, I think there needs to be an investigation here. That's how crazy this is.
Yeah.
West Coast Conference, we're not going to talk Gonzaga or BYU, but let's talk a little St. Mary's here now that they have fallen back out of the rankings. And the question with them, given that they were the media darling here for a little bit this year, and they do have four top 100 wins, albeit all four at home, Stanford, Irvine, BYU, and Gonzaga. Now coming off the loss at BYU, 70-59.
Yeah, they really, really needed that one. Here's their profile here. They really needed that win. They have that bloated record, but it's against no one. I mean, they haven't really done much of anything. Compare them to Little Rock, and in my opinion, it's not even close.
Right. Little Rock has been a team that looks like they're in the field. They're in the field right now on the road.
On the road, yeah.
The best. I mean, I guess you could say Gonzaga's might be in the field right now. Irvine might be as the Big West champion,
but
both those were home games.
To give you an idea, this team is 4-3 on the road, Little Rock 9-1 on the road, and the four teams they've beaten really aren't that good, and one of them, again, was this Pacific team that was absolutely horrible that they needed to beat in the last second. If the two played on equal terms, I think Little Rock would beat them. I think their paper's better. I think their team is better.
Yeah, I don't think St. Mary's can afford to lose another game until a conference tournament championship if they want to be in the discussion, which would include winning at Gonzaga.
Yes.
And that would be huge, getting the sweep of Gonzaga. And
yeah, it would be.
If that, in that case, and if they play Gonzaga a third time and lose to them in the West Coast Conference Finals, I think the case, I would make a case for St. Mary's at that point. Anything short of that, they better beat Gonzaga in the West Coast Conference Finals.
And again, non-conference strength of schedule, 214. Why? And you just want to yell at them, and you want to yell at UAB, and you want to yell at Stephen F. Why don't you play tougher teams? And don't tell me you can't get good teams to play you, because there's other good teams out there, albeit not the multi-bid league teams maybe, that are having the same problem.
One last conference to go. Over in the WAC, it was a rough week for our team, David.
Oh, the team of the people. They've had a fantastic season, but it was, dropping the two games. Going to New Mexico State and really getting outplayed. They could not hit their shots. But you know what? Part of me says you have to credit New Mexico State's defense for that. They knew they needed that win, and they went out there and they got it.
The home loss of Seattle hurt a lot more than that.
Yeah.
Very disappointing there. But right now, still 21-4 overall, borderline top 100 RPI, and still a team that I'm best RPI in the conference, and I think it's a team that still could win the conference tournament
once they get the WAC,
if the WAC would let them play in it. Yeah.
Right. And it still is. We'll have to go back and do a little bit of research. I don't know what North Dakota State was. 10 miles last year. I know that they had over 20 wins. They had, I think the win, it was either at Wisconsin or at Marquette. I know they beat them both in the transitional period. I don't know if any transitional team has ever finished in the top 100. I know Birmingham Southern won the Big South one year, and I was thinking that this would be the second time that's ever happened, but I don't think that Birmingham Southern team got in the top 100. And here's Grand Canyon, right on the cusp of it as a transitional team. So you're still talking. Again, it's not going to be appreciated because it is under the radar. It's not going to be appreciated on a national scale. But this really is a historic season.
Well, 10 miles in his last year at North Dakota State. I don't have their RPI number. I do have their KenPom rating number was 109 that year.
Okay.
We could try to get their RPI number here. Real quick, but I guess the question while I try to get that for us, David, is there somebody here in the in this conference that you think wins the conference tournament? Is it, assuming we don't get the waiver, is it New Mexico State, or do you think somebody like a Seattle or a Bakersfield can come up and take it?
Given how well New Mexico State's been playing recently, I would kind of have to go with them. I think it's going to be theirs.
And meanwhile here, I was promising you a number here. And
we're recording this, Omaha did knock off San Diego or South Dakota State. Had to come from behind to do it. So good win for them.
Yeah, and by the way, that North Dakota State was not a top 100
team
under 10 miles. So there's, I don't know that there's ever been a top 100 transitional team.
I don't think there has been. I one that ever won 20 games.
Okay, I'm sorry. Here, in 2009 season was the year that they did finish with an RPI of 87.
Okay,
happened. All right. I think it did happen. That was their last transitional year.
Are you sure that wasn't their tournament year?
No. I'm sorry. Let me strike that. That was the year they made the NCAA tournament. So
08 was their last. That was 07 was the year that they. Yeah, I want to say it was 06, 07 was the year that they had the 21 wins, I think.
Yeah, yes, they had 21 wins, five of them, four of them being non D1s, but but yes, they were actually RPI of 160 that year, so with a 326 strength of schedules, so that really, they weren't really even close to the top 100 at RPI that year.
So again, here's a chance at a historic season for New Mexico, for the team of the people, Thunder, Dan. Lopes up. Lopes waiver. We need the waiver.
Yeah, and as you said, like I said, South Dakota State gets the loss tonight. But let's go on. Let's do a quick preview of some of the upcoming key under-the-radar games that we haven't mentioned already, and then we'll go to our top 10 lists. Coming up tomorrow night, Thursday night, as always, it seems to be with the Colonial, a couple big games here, including Hofstra's at William & Mary. Northeastern is at Towson.
Hofstra, William & Mary is hugely important. For William & Mary, because they basically need to win out.
Chattanooga on the road at Western Carolina. Arkansas Little Rock starting that road gauntlet at Louisiana Monroe. And that big, huge UC Irvine Hawaii game tomorrow night, 1 a.m.
Yeah, and that one's going to be fun. I'm actually looking forward to that. It's Thursday night.
Friday morning.
Yeah. And again, like, it's the weekend, so you can be tired at work for one day. Stay up and watch. It's that important. I'm going to call you to make sure you're watching.
We'll see about that. Friday night, not many huge games here, but Monmouth is it does have a nationally televised game at Ryder at 9 o'clock Friday night, and the Lopes will be in Seattle 10 o'clock Friday night, trying to get a little revenge from their loss.
That one should be fun. That's going to be a fun game. And again, a road win. It's going to give them a little bit of an RPI bump. So,
heading into Saturday, again, looking at some of these Colonial games, William & Mary's at Towson, James Madison's at Wilmington. Also, Little Rock continuing on the road at Louisiana Lafayette, Chattanooga continuing the road at East Tennessee State. But a couple games out of the Ivy League that I wanted to circle here, Princeton at Columbia and Yale at Harvard.
Couple,
especially that Princeton-Columbia game.
Yeah, that one's going to be fun. I believe we'll be – I don't know if TV's going to pick that one up or not, but we'll be watching on the Ivy League Network.
So. Princeton-Columbia, ESPN3 has picked it up for streaming.
Excellent.
So it is a free stream for them.
Free stream, yeah.
Wright State at Valpo also. Valpo trying to get revenge from that earlier loss coming up on Saturday.
I have a feeling they are going to succeed.
Coming up Sunday Stony Brook's in action, hosting New Hampshire, trying to remain undefeated. But game here in the Missouri Valley Conference, Evansville is at Loyola Chicago. This is a battle of the last year's CBI and CIT champions, who have taken very different turns to this season.
And that's noteworthy. It's interesting, but it's also doesn't mean a damn thing for this.
A couple games Monday I also wanted to get into here. Monmouth with a chance for revenge hosting Manhattan.
We'll be doing our Hoops HD report. That we might have to tune into that one. It will be a show. My God. Is Monmouth going to be ready for Tim Clouse?
Manhattan.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah. No. Okay. The Iona game's going to be a little later. Sorry.
The
Southland, you got Incarnate Word at Stephen F. Austin. I mentioned that game earlier. Interesting non-conference game, only half under the radar, but it's a makeup game from earlier in the year. New Mexico State is going to be at Wichita State.
Right.
A game that Wichita State really can't afford to lose if they want to.
Maybe that one should have just stayed canceled.
But the big game of the day coming up on Monday, 1 o'clock, national TV on ESPNU, LIU, Brooklyn, and St. Francis, Brooklyn, one of our favorite conference rivalries. We mentioned it at the top of the show. There it is, Monday afternoon, President's Day. So if you're off of work, watch it. If you're working, leave work and watch it.
Yes, I will be watching.
Also, another nationally televised game that afternoon is following that game is Oakland at Wright State. Not quite at the same type of stakes as that LIU Brooklyn Brooklyn game.
Yeah.
But on that note, David, any other final thoughts for the evening?
Yes.
We didn't do our top tens, did we?
Oh, no. Yeah, we need to do that.
Okay, so let's do our top tens before our final thoughts.
Okay.
I'll run through mine. You can tell me where you feel that these teams are. I have the Monmouth Hawks number one overall at this point.
They have the best paper. I think they have the best case as far as their credentials go. I think Little Rock is really good, and I also think Valpo is really good, even though their paper isn't there. Those would definitely be my top three, though. But I mean Monmouth, merit wise, they're definitely number one. I don't even think it's close.
Yeah, I have Monmouth number one. I have Little Rock two. Valpo I have down at four. I've moved Chattanooga up to number three because I love that win at Dayton more than anything that Valpo has done. And yeah. I think I'm still very suspicious of what Valpo has at the bottom of their profile there. It's kind of scary to me. If they need an at-large bid, I think they may have some trouble. At number five, I think I have a team you don't even have in your rankings. That I've got the same error as Gales here at number five.
Yeah, I didn't have them. And again, it's I'm just really underwhelmed by them. I think they're all home court hero. When you're sweating out sub-200 teams on the road, which they've done more than once, I just don't. I don't think they're as good as Stony Brook. I don't think they would beat Stony Brook on equal terms. I don't think they would beat Akron on equal terms. Maybe I don't have them in my top 10 at all.
I have at number six, I have UC Irvine. Hawaii, yeah. I did not put in my top 10. I just had them barely out as an honorable mention. I think you have both of those in your top 10.
Yeah, I had them both in. Bill and Mary was a team that I overlooked. I would have actually had Bill and Mary ahead of both of them.
Okay, yeah, I have Bill and Mary at seven overall, Akron at eight. I've got Stony Brook in at number nine. They are in my top 10.
Yeah.
And in my 10th final team, I've got Yale in here from the Ivy League. I really think that this Yale team is playing well. If they go 2-0 this weekend, it's at Dartmouth and at Harvard. They'll be 8-0 in conference, and we may actually end up in a situation where somebody does run away with the Ivy League after all here.
Right.
I did give an honorable mention to Hawaii, to South Dakota State, which I would now take away after they lost tonight.
Yeah.
and the Lopes. Still an honorable mention. They're still on my board, but not in the top 10 after the 0-2 week.
Yeah, but it's still a great story. Grand Canyon season's not over yet. Lots to play for. We got to get that waiver.
Yeah. Any other teams you have in your top 10?
No, we covered them all.
Well, on that note, now let's go to your final thought.
Well, my final thought is just I hope everybody watching enjoyed the show. And the reason I hope that is because I hope they watch the show, because I'm hoping like hell that this recorded. So
if it did not record, right, you will have seen the first minute or two. And guess what? We're not going to redo it. We will talk about these teams next week. But on that note, we do want to thank you all for joining us, hopefully.
Yes.
And we'll talk to you again. I think actually tomorrow night we're going to be doing our bracket rundown show. And next week, Under the Radar, and Hoops HD Report and everything.
Okay.
Have a good night, everybody.